1 Corinthians chapter 8, we find another problem. Paul starts a chapter with the words "now concerning." As I said before, when he starts a chapter with the words "now concerning," he's dealing with a question the Corinthians had asked him. Now, you may find this a strange question, but the Corinthians wanted to know about the subject of meat offered to idols. Should we eat this meat offered to idols, or should we not eat it? Now, that's not a big problem today, but the principles we're going to get from this chapter apply to many things that happen today. And we're going to show you that in Indian culture, the principles that we're going to talk about will apply and do fit. A number of years ago, when I was in Bible school, I came home for the weekend. My brother and I decided that we wanted to wash his car. And so we took it down to the local creek. We washed his car. And while we were washing it, someone from our local church, who taught a Sunday school in that local church, saw us washing the car. A friend of mine who was in this Sunday school class advised me later that the next Sunday, this individual who saw us washing our car taught a Sunday school class on Bible school students washing their cars on Sunday. Terrible sin. And added the fact that they even had on shorts on a Sunday. What was she doing? She was saying that it was wrong for someone to do anything on Sunday in the form of work. Now, this whole thought came out of the Old Testament and the Sabbath. Basically, it was an area that is called a gray area. That is, certain things that a Christian has a right to do, but it could cause another Christian to be offended or to fall into sin. We know from the Old Testament that the Sabbath was not Sunday. We know technically that it's a right for a Christian to wash his car on Sunday is not committing against sin. Yet there's another principle that comes into play, and that is, what if something I have a right to do could cause a brother or sister to fall into sin? And that's the question that Paul addresses in 1 Corinthians chapter 8. Three things he emphasizes. He states the problem, he explains the problem, then he gives a solution for the problem. The problem is stated in verses 1, 2, and 3 of chapter 8 of 1 Corinthians. Keep in mind, we just came out of a chapter dealing with marriage and some answers to those problems. Now we're dealing with the subject of meat offered to idols, or if you like, Christian liberty. By that I simply mean certain things Christians have the right to do, but could cause other Christians to fall into sin. He says, chapter 8, verse 1, concerning things sacrificed to idols. We know we all have knowledge. Knowledge makes arrogant, but love edifies. Keep this principle in mind. The Corinthians boasted about wisdom and knowledge. He's saying that knowledge basically puffs people up. Puffs them up personally. Love, he says, does the opposite. Love edifies. The word edify means to build up. We're going to see the word edify come up over and over again in 1 Corinthians chapter 14 when we get into spiritual gifts. Corinthians claim to have spiritual gifts that would build up themselves. Paul says we should use our spiritual gifts to build up others. Love edifies. Chapter 13, we get a good description of love. Knowledge simply puffs up the one who knows the knowledge. Verse 2 says, if anyone supposes he knows anything, he is not yet known as he ought to know. But if anyone loves God, he is known by him. That's the problem he states in verses 1, 2, and 3. Things sacrificed to idols. More specifically, it was meat sacrificed to idols. What's the connection? What's the problem here? In Paul's day, all the meat people bought because of the worship of idols in Corinth, all the meat had originally been placed before an idol before it was sold in the meat market. Animals were sacrificed, certain parts were eaten, and the rest were sold in the market. Sometimes this meat was even cheaper. And since many Christians were not wealthy, they found buying this meat was better. But the problem was this meat had been offered to idols. And now that they were Christians, some Christians said, you cannot eat that meat. It's wrong. Other Christians said, hey, I know I have the right to eat this meat. Putting it down in front of a god, an idol, doesn't change the meat at all. And so the problem was that those who ate it looked down on those who wouldn't eat it. Those who wouldn't eat it criticize those who would. Paul is going to give principles in this chapter on how to solve that problem. See, we don't have the problem of meat offered to idols today. We do have other problems. Some people say as a Christian it's wrong to go to movies. Some people say as a Christian it's okay to have social drinks. Some say it's not okay to have social drinks. Let's say, for example, in your culture, a certain native leader may say it's okay to go to a sweat. Another native leader may say it's not okay to go to a sweat. It was tied into my Indian religion in the past. Therefore, I do not have the right to do it. Paul gives principles to deal with these areas in Christian liberty, what some people often call gray areas, areas that the Bible does not speak directly to. In verses 4 to 8, he explains the problem even more. Therefore, now, anytime you see the word therefore in Paul's writing, see what it's there for, because it's there for a reason. He's always going to refer back to something he just got done saying. Therefore, he says, since these things sacrificed are sacrificed to idols, therefore, he says, concerning the eating of these things sacrificed to idols, we know there's no such thing as an idol in the world, and that there's no God but one. Notice he says we know this. It's a basic principle. There really is only one God. No matter how many gods people worship, there's only one true God. He alone is the all-powerful God. Therefore, technically, an idol is a piece of wood, it's a piece of stone, it's a piece of metal. He goes on, verse 5, for even if there are so-called gods, whether in heaven or on earth, as indeed there are many gods and many lords, yet for us, verse 6, there is but one God, the Father, from whom are all things, and we exist for him, and one Lord Jesus Christ, by whom are all things, and we exist through him. Even though there are so-called gods, there's only really one true God. We know, he says, that the idol is nothing. The idol, if you set a Big Mac down in front of 10 idols, it will not change the meat. It will not change the Big Mac. It is still the same. There's really only one God. Paul says we know that. However, verse 7, he interjects a thought here in verse 7 that's very important. He says in verse 7, however, not all men have this knowledge. What knowledge is he talking about? The knowledge that idols are nothing. See, not all Christians realize the fact that an idol is nothing. Some, because they grew up all their lives, they worshipped idols, they sacrificed their meat to idols, their whole life was tied into idolatry. It was such a strong tie that for some of them, they do not realize that idols really are nothing. And some, verse 7, being accustomed to the idol until now, that is, they grew up with it all their lives, eat food as if it were sacrificed to an idol. And their conscience being weak is defiled. In other words, this person who grew up with idols and feels he cannot eat it, if he eats meat offered to idols, it defiles his conscience. It ruins him. It causes him to fall into sin. Verse 8, he says, but food will not commend us to God. We are neither the worse if we do not eat, nor the better if we do eat. No matter what you eat food-wise, if you love to eat liver, or you love to eat pork, or you love to eat pizza, the food itself will not commend you to God. You're not the better if you eat, you're not the worse if you do not eat. Verse 9 says, though, but take care lest this liberty of yours, this right of yours, somehow become a stumbling block to the weak. In other words, Paul's saying, as a Christian, you have the right or the liberty, the freedom, to eat this meat that's been offered to idols. But he points out in verse 9 that this right of yours could possibly become a stumbling block to the weak. This word stumbling block is an interesting word. It's something that is placed in front of someone else to trip over. On your notes, you have a picture of a little man ready to trip over a box. Paul says it's possible for believers to put stumbling blocks in front of other believers, something for them to fall over and trip over. And here he's saying that the right of one believer may become a stumbling block to another believer, this right of yours. Here's what he says, verse 10. For if someone sees you who have knowledge, in other words, these Corinthians claim, hey, I know these idols are nothing. I've got this knowledge. I'm strong enough. I can eat this meat. I can go to an idol temple. I can do all these things that won't affect me. I've got my act together. If he sees you who have knowledge dining in an idol's temple, will not his conscience, if he is weak, be strengthened to eat things sacrificed to idols? In other words, this believer sees another believer sitting in that temple eating meat off of idols. And he says, wow, if that man who has knowledge is eating that, it must be okay for me to do it. Let's apply it to today. Let's say you're a person, some Christians believe that you can have a social drink. That is, you can sit down and have one drink and that's okay. Let's say another believer sees you doing that and he says, wow, there's one of the elders of our church having a drink. It must be okay. He goes out and has a drink. He ends up drunk and falls into sin. What Paul is saying is, your freedom, your liberty could cause another brother, another sister to fall into sin. And that's what was going on in Corinth. The weak brothers saw the strong brothers eating meat offered to idols in an idol temple. He said, well, it must be okay. Because Bill's doing it, and Bill's part of our church, and Bill has knowledge, and Bill might even be a leader. It's okay to do it. Only when he goes and does it, he can't handle that. He falls into sin. He's back into idolatry. Why did he even do it? Because Bill did it. And so this right of Bill's could cause this other believer to fall into sin. That's what Paul's trying to get at. Verses 9 to 13, he gives a solution. That's what we're talking about now. Verse 11, he says, for through your knowledge, he who is weak is ruined, the brother for whose sake Christ died. Now, in the Greek language, Greek sentences, often and when you want to emphasize something, they will take the word and put it right at the beginning of the sentence. In verse 11 reads this way. The first word in verse 11 in the Greek is this, ruined. In other words, ruined, he says, is the brother for whose sake Christ died. Why is he ruined? Why is he destroyed? He's destroyed because of your right. Oh, you say, I've got the right to eat meat offered to idols. Or you may say, I've got the right to have a social drink. I've got the right to go to a sweat. I've got the right to do these things. Paul says, fine, you have that right. But it's possible that your right could cause, and notice the emphasis in verse 11, a brother to fall into sin. The problem in Corinth was they were so carnal, if you remember, they didn't care about the brethren. We're going to see in chapter 11, some came hungry, some came drunk, some could care less about the brethren. That's the basic core problem here. It wasn't that they had to have that meat. The key problem was that they could care less about their brother if he fell into sin. I could hear the Corinthians saying, that's his problem, that weak-minded person. He should know better. He should know these idols are nothing. Paul says it's possible to ruin, to destroy a brother. Notice what he goes one step further in verse 12. And thus, by sinning against the brethren and wounding their conscience when it is weak, you sin against Christ. It's no longer just causing to stumble. Paul says in verse 12, it's sin. He said it's not just a matter of offending a brother. He says it's sin. And we're not talking here about things that bug other Christians. Almost everything, there always will be things that bug other Christians. He's talking here about something that you do which might cause another Christian to fall into sin. See, Paul puts love of the brethren ahead of your rights. That's really the key here. Notice verse 13 in his conclusion. Therefore, he says, therefore, referring back to what he just got done saying, therefore, if food causes my brother to stumble, notice again the word brother. He uses it twice in this verse. If food causes my brother to stumble, and it might, I will never eat meat again. Why? For the purpose that I might not cause my brother to stumble. Now, in the Greek language here, he uses a double negative. Literally, it says this, I will never, ever eat meat again. Well, that's quite a sacrifice. No more prime rib, no more Big Macs. Paul said, I'm willing to give up a right I have to eat meat. Paul knew he had the right. No one could take that right away from him. He was saying, I am willing to give it up. Why? To be a show-off? No. So that he would not cause his brother to stumble into sin. That I might not cause my brother to stumble. I will never, ever, ever eat meat again. Now Paul is willing to give up his rights. When we get into chapter 9, we're going to find out that he illustrates this in his own life. He gave up numerous rights in his Christian life to serve the Lord. He's saying to the Corinthian believers, you too ought to be willing to give up some of your rights, lest you cause a brother or sister to fall into sin in Christ. He's going to demonstrate that with himself. The next lesson we'll see in chapter 9, verse 24, he compares this whole thing to a race in the Christian life. In a race, an athlete gives up certain rights that he can prepare for the races. Paul says, in my Christian life, I will give up even eating meat if it could possibly cause my brother, to fall into sin. What was the problem? Eating meat offered idols, but it was deeper than that. It was doing something which you had the right to do, but which could cause a brother to stumble into sin. What's the solution? Paul says, I'll give up that right, very simply. If I could possibly, by my behavior, cause a brother to fall into sin, I will give it up for him. That ought to be our attitude. That wasn't the Corinthians' attitude. I trust in your life that that's the attitude you carry into your local fellowship, that you care so much about the brethren that you'd be willing to give up something you had the right to do because you loved him that much.